Welcome to episode 19 of the Serious About Security podcast for Tuesday, October 30th, 2012, brought to you by the Greater Lafayette Security Professionals Group, Secure Purdue, and the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or Sirius, at Purdue University. Let me introduce the hosts of today's podcast. I'm Preston Wiley, CISSP, CCNA.
This is Keith Watson, Research Engineer at Sirius.
And I'm Mike Hill, CISSP. In announcements today, the Sirius Security Seminar has more great speakers coming up in the next few weeks, and I'm going to go ahead and apologize in advance if I get any of these names wrong. Babeev Garg from Indiana University will present on October 31st. Roxana Giambazu from Columbia University will present on November 7th. Someone from Cypress Electronics will present on November 14th. The seminars will be held at Stewart Center in room G52 at 4:30 p.m. on Wednesdays. They are also broadcast live on the Purdue channel in the Lafayette area. You can also get them as podcast or on YouTube. See the Sirius website for more details at www.cerias.purdue.edu.
So for the November Greater Lafayette Security Professionals meeting, we're going to do something slightly different. And during our last meeting, Pascal Monnier asked if we could do something where we talk about anecdotes from the security professionals at the meeting. And we're looking for stories, lessons learned from our members. And we want to have everybody come with at least one great story from the trenches in which you learn something about security, the nature of risk, unexpected outcomes, or human weakness. And we do encourage anybody coming with their story. If you have pictures, we always love to see those. That might be difficult to get, but who cares? You know, it'd be awesome. Anyway, so this should be a fun and helpful event. We hope to learn a lot from this, from others' experiences in the trenches, if you will. So, but even if you don't have anything to share, we want to encourage you to come. The meeting will be held on November 8th at 11:30 a.m. in Young Hall, room 647. And as always, don't forget to bring your lunch.
In news this podcast, we have two items. Mozilla Firefox and Thunderbird were updated to 16.0.2 to address a critical security issue, and Oracle released a Java critical security update advisory on October 16th. The patch corrects 30 security issues, 29 of which can be remotely exploitable without authentication. The current versions of Java are 7, update 7, 1.6.037, 1.5.038, 1.4.240. If you are a Mac OS X user, there is an update available. Be warned that installation of the update removes the Java web browser plugin completely. So if you are, you will no longer be able to run Java applets from the web browser. If you need this functionality, you will have to install the Mac OS X Java package available from Oracle. And that's news, so we'll move on to articles today. This is a special episode. This is the last podcast we're going to be doing before the elections on November 6th. So I thought we would do a election special this episode. We're basically going to talk about voting and the kind of security issues and vulnerabilities that exist with voting technologies. So I'm going to start out and kind of give an overview and kind of a history of the voting technologies that have been used during various elections in the present and in the past. Well, as I'm sure we all know, the first voting technology that existed was where you took a piece of paper and you wrote your votes on it and you turned it in, and it was manually counted by people. I'm sure that was that issue is and still was and still is error prone to, you know, it's very human based, so you could have some issues with that. Now in 1890, a new technology came along, the mechanical lever voting machines, where you get into this booth and you'd flip some switches and you'd pull a lever and your vote would be counted that way. It removed kind of an element of human error, but unlike the paper ballots, there was no paper trail, and so that you couldn't you could assume that your vote was counted correctly, but there was no recount ability with the mechanical lever voting machines. And then in the 1960s, IBM introduced the punch card voting systems, where you had a punch card that you have a special thing to punch out holes in a card. And this was a fairly revolutionary voting technology, because unlike the mechanical lever voting machines, which weighed like half a ton, these systems weighed about 6 pounds. And so you could easily transport them. You could set up, you know, voting areas in more places, have voting more accessible to the masses and all that. And so that was the next technology. And there's some controversy on that with hanging chads and things like that from the 2000 election. And those have pretty much been eliminated because of that controversy. I think there's 4 Idaho counties that still use punch card voting systems, but they've been eliminated from use. And then after that, we had optical scan paper ballot systems, where you'd fill in a little bubble with a pen or pencil, or you'd complete an arrow on a piece of paper, and that would go through a scanner, either at the voting center or in a central location, and your vote would be kind of counted in that way. I mean, there was a paper trail, just like with the punch card votings, where they could recount these votes by just putting them through the computer again, or even hand counting them manually if they felt there was a problem with the computer. And then we have electronic voting, where you have a touch screen or buttons in some cases, where you would you put in your vote and it would be cast electronically. Now some of these have paper. You can verify. They'll print out a piece of paper with a barcode or something on it that they can later use to recount your vote. And some of them do not have these verifiable paper audit trails. So if a recount happens, it's just let's push a button on the computer. What's the vote count? Okay, yeah, that's what we wrote down. So that's correct. And this kind of goes back to the lever, the mechanical lever devices of old that also didn't have weren't auditable. So it was similar to those, in that there was no paper trail, and that, I think, is an abbreviated history of voting technologies. And the ones that are still in use are optical scan, direct recording electronic systems with and without a paper trail. Punch card voting systems are in use in 4 counties in the entire U.S. So those really are very out of favor. Mechanical levers have gone away completely. And hand-counted paper ballots are still being used by various places, a lot of times for absentees and provisional ballots. They count those by hand. There's a limited number of those, and those are still being used. And obviously, they have to be manually counted. So that is the voting technologies that we have in use today.
So before we started, we kind of went through each of us talking about which systems we've used before, and I think that might be interesting to some folks. And so I've lived in a few places, and when I was first able to vote, I was still living in Indiana, and so I used a mechanical lever voting machine, and then I moved to California and I used a punch card voting system there, and then I believe when I moved to Colorado, they had an optical scan system. And then upon returning to Indiana, we then moved into the digital age, I guess, and went with the direct recording electronic systems. We actually have Diebold DRE machines here in Tippecanoe County. Unfortunately, the ones in Tippecanoe County do not have a voter verified paper audit trail. So when you look at the map of counties in Indiana, we are definitely in the red category from verifiedvoting.org. Mike, what systems have you used?
Well, like you, when I first voted, it was actually using the manual lever. There was only one election I voted in for that. Unlike you, I've not moved across the country, but I moved across the state of Indiana here. And in the following elections, we used the optical scan ballots. And then when I came over to Tippecanoe County here, it was the direct recording electronic machines, as you mentioned, without the paper trail.
When I first started voting, I used the punch card systems here in Indiana. They had those in where the area I was. And then I moved to California, and they used the optical scan system where you fill a bubble and you put it in a bin. And then I moved back to Indiana, and then they had upgraded to the DRE digital ones, and that's what I used. I never had the pleasure of using the mechanical system.
So we've all played with a majority of the options here. What's interesting to me is that this year, even though we have a lot more electronic voting systems in place across the country, some of the discussions that have occurred related to the security, if you will, of voting equipment has not been a big news item this year. In the past presidential elections and local elections, it has been more of a news item. So one might assume that these problems have been solved because the press isn't talking about them. But I don't believe that is the case by any stretch. And one thing I was going to mention, on November 1st, there is a discussion related to e-voting and risks associated with it, and that's being put on by the Center for Information Technology Policy at Princeton. And what's interesting about this one is that it's actually going to be live streamed, and so that is available. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's on November 1st. I believe it starts at about 1:30. And so they have a lot of good speakers that are going to kind of address this sort of issue. But really, this is the only thing this year where I've seen any mention of some of the risks associated with electronic voting systems. And I find that concerning. I think part of the problem is that maybe the security community has not been making this a big priority. There are some efforts at various universities looking at some of these electronic voting issues, but they started out with some amount of funding, and maybe that has fallen off over the years. Maybe this research has changed a little bit. Maybe, you know, I don't know the reasons. But for whatever, this year, those issues don't seem to be in the news as much. I was able to only find two articles that were somewhat related to what we're talking about today, one of which was in Information Week, talking about hacking threat, and they listed 10 facts, which I found to be interesting. But other than that, not too much in the news. What's interesting is some of the notes that they made is related to Diebold machines, which I mentioned we actually use here in Tippecanoe County. These are machines, as well as the Sequoia voting systems, where some significant issues had been discovered in previous elections in terms of these machines miscounting votes or not operating correctly or malfunctioning in some way. But we still have them. Part of the problem is we spent a lot of money on these machines, and there's a real a sunk cost problem where we're not likely to change them because there's one or two what the election officials might consider minor issues, even though the integrity of the election is in question. We're going to still have these things around, and until they can be proven to be totally unreliable, which there's not enough evidence yet to that somebody in the political realm would consider significant evidence to throw them out yet. They've spent a lot of money on them, and that's an investment, and that's not an investment they want to just chuck and replace or go back to a previous voting method. So that's part of the problem. Some of the other issues highlighted were related to voter registration rolls being vulnerable, the idea of internet voting. City of Washington, D.C. had a trial in 2010. They invited some researchers to actually try to break it, and within 48 hours, they did. The security of that system was easily compromised. But what were the results of that? I mean, we had this effort that said, you know, the way you set this particular system up wasn't very secure. But there's still a lot of interest in doing internet-based voting, so that's a concern as well. Anyways, I found this article that highlighted some issues pretty interesting. So we can talk about some specifics of that, but I thought I'd just highlight those few items there. Any of you guys have any more comments on some of those issues in that article?
Well, the one thing that really struck me as interesting is with the DRE machines, the fact that they didn't just fail outright. I just thought, think of them as a computer, and when there's an issue, they described an issue where they overheated, and I thought, okay, it just shuts down. Maybe even loses a few votes or something like that. But it turns out that there was one scenario where when it overheated, it started casting phantom votes. And that's a very bad thing, and it's hard to imagine that that's the way it would fail. So I think it kind of highlights how, you know, all it seems like no voting technology is perfect. But I think with the move towards the electronic machines, the big push for that, you know, the whole hanging chads and all of those issues kind of, I think, helped elevate the push towards these electronic machines. But it turns out that they can have their own issues, and that was one of the most intriguing things I read in the article was not that it would just fail, because I thought, well, okay, it fails, someone can't cast their votes. I mean, I've heard of those issues on the news, you know, there was a power outage and people couldn't cast their votes, and there was, you know, they were upset about that, but I never envisioned that the machine would fail in such a way where it would actually start casting these phantom votes, and it didn't go into specifics as far as how many phantom votes, but that could seriously change the outcome of an election if it were a high number.
Well, I think voting in general has very unique challenges and security ramifications with it that really doesn't exist much anywhere else that I can think of. I mean, we're talking about we need one person to have one vote, period. And there's a push towards secret ballots, where you can't tell who voted. So how do you figure out that one person who you don't know who it is only got one vote? And it's tricky. It's very, very tricky. And the other thing about voting is it's time sensitive, which, I mean, in the article that you pointed out, Keith, one issue talked about was a distributed denial of service attack on a internet voting system. Could have a large impact, where a distributed denial of service attack on a bank or some other shopping site or whatever has an impact on voting. We're talking about time sensitive. If they distributed denial of service attack for a day, then they've just taken down voting for however many number of people. So it's got some unique issues that don't exist really anywhere else that I can think of.
Right, and when you're doing elections, there's some competing goals, if you will. One is to, like you said, one vote per person, but how do you track that person and make sure they didn't do two votes, three votes or more? There's also the idea of anonymity. I should be able to cast a vote and no one else should know how I voted. But we're still trying to catch instances where somebody votes more than once. So we have to have some sort of record associating that person with the vote, yet we don't want to have the ability to know what vote they cast. So there's some competing goals here, which kind of make it challenging to system design. And then, as Mike mentioned, there's also this reliability factor in terms of just the equipment operating as intended. And there's some question with that. And then, so part of this discussion in the research community has been, well, we don't want to have commercial systems that have closed source operating systems or code. We want to be able to audit those. But yet these commercial entities don't want to release their code for review because of trade secrets or patents or whatever reason. They just don't want to open up their source code for public review because that would then reduce their competitiveness with the other vendors, for example. Yet we need to have some trust, and we need to be able to verify that these machines operate as intended, and yet we can't do that. So there's a lot of competing goals here that are in conflict, and I think that really makes the challenge here with electronic voting systems.
Yes, and as you mentioned, it's a complex issue, and it's not an easy one to solve. And another thing I read in that article is that really, when you lose trust in the equipment, you lose trust in the legitimacy of the winner that's selected. So, you know, there's that feeling of when you cast your vote that your vote got counted correctly. And when these things come into question, and again, maybe it's a small percentage, you know, that doesn't affect the overall outcome. But when these things come to light, people sort of feel like, well, maybe my vote didn't get counted correctly. And that's a real problem. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, touching upon the internet voting, I'll just throw my comment out on that right now. I think that's just a bad idea. You know, we talk week after week about how when you connect a system to the internet, boom, it's subject to so many other issues. So I think in the case of voting, that should not – I don't envision that becoming mainstream ever, because I think it's just, you know, it's way too risky. So I don't think that's the solution, but, you know, these are things that are probably likely to stick around. And the one thing that I did kind of read in the articles is that things are getting better. I think maybe that's why we've not seen so much of it in the news in this past – In this election year, as previous years, things do seem to be getting better, but there are still issues that do need to be addressed.
Well, as with pretty much any polling method that you have, there's going to be some margin of error. And I think the idea with voting is you want to get your margin of error as small as possible. And I think that in the article that I think Keith, it was in your article, it mentioned the margin of error, or the essentially the bad votes were down from 2% to 1%, or maybe a slightly less than 1%, and that's a good goal. Of course, I don't know how they get those numbers. I mean, I think those are just votes that were cast in error. You know, there's the concept of overvoting, where you accidentally, you know, pick two candidates for an office where there's only one, so that basically that vote for that election gets thrown out and your vote doesn't count because they have no idea which candidate you meant to vote for, so they can't really count your vote. That was a problem with the overheating machine, is they detected a large number of overvotes, more than they should have. And I think they discovered that the machine was casting extra votes for an office, and people were overvoting at an alarming rate. Now, it seems like electronic voting machines should never have overvotes. It seems like there should be something in place to prevent that from happening. You can only pick one candidate on the touchscreen or whatever, and I don't see why there would be even that issue with an electronic voting machine. But I haven't used all of them, and I am not 100% familiar with the technology behind them, so I don't know.
So we may be getting better, but we still have some infrastructure issues in terms of the systems we're using. And one of the ways that have been suggested to address some of the electronic voting system is to have a voter verified audit paper trail. And what this is basically a printer that prints off your vote, the votes you cast, and drops it into a bin. And usually, if I remember right, the way it works is one part drops into a bin that can be used for recount, and one that you have that you can look at and verify that the machine voted the way that you said. So you take something home with you, and another one gets dropped in a bin that can be used for recount later. That would be great. We need more systems that do that. Certainly in Tippecanoe County here in Indiana, we do not have that, although there is an attachment, I believe, sold by the same company that made our voting machines that could do that. So I'd like to see those, certainly in our county and certainly everywhere that uses this particular type of machine or anything similar to it. That's not a guaranteed solution, but I think it's a good idea and will certainly address some of the issues in recounting if we cannot trust the machines themselves. We at least have some paper form that we can go back and review. The other thing I was going to mention is what can voters do? Obviously, we're kind of stuck because we're stuck with our Diebold election systems machines. What I would like to see is that when you go to the polls, that you watch out for not only electronic machines that have issues, if it's even possible, but make sure you're checking to verify your vote before you cast it. There's a way to review all that. You should always do that. Does that mean it's going to record it correctly? Not necessarily, but start with that at least. There are some mobile apps that you can install on your phone to report voter fraud. Typically, these are related to illegal campaign tactics, like having campaign posters too close to the voting polling stations, so many feet, they've got to be so far away. Some party representatives pressuring you to vote a certain way. They're not supposed to be able to do that. That's a way of reporting fraud using these systems. But if you think that the electronic voting machine you're using is actually not working correctly, you should also use these apps and report that. Now, reporting it may not help us this time, but it does give us some information about potential problems, problems that can be addressed, maybe not in this election, but in future elections. So if we record these events as they happen, they may help us motivate some change in the election process and systems that we use for the next election. So if you do see anything that seems a little off with your electronic voting machine, make a note of it, report it. And hopefully, maybe some of the results of that might be the addition of these verified voter audit paper trail systems that may help us with a recount situation, or at least to verify that machine is working correctly.
Yeah, along the lines of the paper trail, the one article kind of described how it provides an integrity to the whole voting process, and I find it interesting that that's the direction that we're going in now. But to be honest, after reading the articles, I'm sort of in favor of it. I think it's now understanding that these are issues that are happening, I think it's good that we have this paper trail to go back to. Looking at the map from earlier, it's kind of interesting because the counties that only do the paper ballots are actually showing in like a nice green, and then the electronic voting machines, they're like a shade of orange or yellow depending upon whether or not they have the paper trail. So it's kind of interesting that the and I don't know the cost behind any of these technologies, but maybe at least the less expensive technology might actually be providing a little more integrity than the more expensive electronic voting machine. But I think it's important that when voters go to cast their vote, that they feel like that the vote that they cast is captured correctly. And for now, it seems like a paper-based trail, a printout of what happened there, or if it's a paper that they're filling out that shows it and it goes into the ballot box, is maybe the best way to kind of ensure that. Now, the voting machines are nice because they can calculate the votes very quickly. And I think that's, you know, I think we're very much an instant gratification society. So I like that. I like that feature that, you know, I mean, I watch the elections, you know, during the years, and I'm like, why can't we know the results right now? I mean, because it's a computer, right? If a computer's capturing it, it's calculating it. It knows instantly. Why are we waiting? And I'm sure some of that is safeguarding and making sure that there weren't these types of issues. You know, that's kind of the balance that has to take place here. But I find it very, very interesting that in the light of where things have gone since 2000, we're sort of reversing back and saying, okay, we need these paper trails. And I think for nothing more, I would hope that we make it. I would hope that we reach the point one day where we're doing some sort of an easy electronic voting. So you can go in, you can cast your vote quickly. It can be calculated quickly. All those things can happen. But in the event that anyone feels that something went wrong, there's a trail and it can be audited. And that audit and those audits take place, verify 100, match up 100% to what was done electronically. That is the end goal. That's what should happen. You know, the paper vote should match exactly 100%. Maybe that will happen, maybe it won't, because the paper votes, depending upon how they're tabulated, maybe there's some human error that gets interjected there. But we should have confidence in the vote that we place, that it's being counted correctly.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. It's kind of a cyclical cycle. You know, when we were using those lever-based, I never got a chance to use one of those. But those lever-based, they didn't have a paper trail with them. They were basically an old-fashioned version of electronic voting without a paper trail. I mean, you put your vote in, you pull the lever, your vote was put into the machine, and they at the end of the voting, they get the vote out of the machine, get the number out of the machine, send it to the central election authority, and your vote would be counted. It was the same deal, only different technology. And then we moved to a paper trail with the punch cards, and that was working for quite a while. And then we have 2000, you know, Florida. We have the issue with the counting of the votes and the infamous hanging chads and stuff like that. And those got a bad rap. And then we started to kind of go back to this electronic or this unauditable system. And people are, I think, a lot more quickly seeing that we kind of need a hybrid system that kind of incorporates both methods.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what we talk about 4 years from now, you know, what the next major election will bring, the way the technology's changing. Who knows, maybe it will go back again to some other just purely electronic. Maybe it will be internet voting by then, though I don't see that happening necessarily. Or maybe, like you said, it's some hybrid. But yeah, I also think that because of the incident in 2000, because it's still fresh enough in most of our minds, there's a little bit of I think there's still a little more concern on the voters' parts. And that's why I think having something you can audit. You know, I know I'm not saying this the best way, but basically what you want is you ideally would like a system to be flawless, but what the audit trail provides you is a way to say, and here's how you can verify that it's flawless. Trust us when you place your vote here, it's capturing it correctly. But if not, if challenged, you can pull the paper version of those votes together and say, look, the numbers match. The system's working correctly. I think you need to have something like that just to demonstrate to the American public that it is happening correctly, not just to trust in this closed source technology that no one really knows much about and say, well, it's working correctly. It'll never cast an extra vote if the machine overheats, because we now know that it can.
Right. Certainly there's a lot of research still going on, although it's maybe not as public as we hope. And certainly not every researcher thinks that the methods we use today are effective, and may think that there may be other options that we've not considered yet. So certainly I think funding research into voting system is certainly a good idea. And hopefully taking the results of that research and mandating from a federal level standards that voting systems need to follow. But again, that's long term. That's down the road here. So in terms of your vote on November 6th, well, we'll hope for the best and we'll see what happens.
All right, and well, with that, we'll wrap it up. I just wanted to thank Keith Watson and Mike Hill, as well as Sirius and Secure Purdue. I'm Preston Wiley. Have a safe and secure day.